Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Trinity Reconnected. My name is Jerry Foley. Today I'm catching up with two more 1982 graduates from Trinity College in Dublin. Neither knew each other at the time, or indeed until very recently, when I suggested that together they might just have quite a lot in common. Intrigued? I hope so. Let's meet them, starting with Jerry, who's in Rome. Afternoon, Jerry.
Good afternoon to you. This is Jerry Whelan. I'm a Jesuit priest. I'm teaching theology at the Gregorian University in Rome. That's me.
That's a long way from studying economics and social studies in Trinity. And now we go across to Bangor in Northern Ireland to say hello to Charles.
Hello, Jerry. It's lovely to be talking to you. I studied French and German, and then towards the end of my studies in Trinity, I completed something called grad scope because I was interested to find out what I might do for the rest of my life. It was a survey about possible future careers. I typed in all the answers, and much to my astonishment, solicitor came out on top, closely followed by Minister of Religion. The only reason solicitor was slightly ahead was because I expressed a preference for a 9-to-5 job, with apologies to any solicitors who are listening. Minister of Religion came out rather well, and I suppose that responded to a call in my life at that time, and I ended up training for the ministry of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, and for the past 23 years I've been minister here in Bangor West.
Well, that's a very full description, but we'll explore a little bit further your respective journeys to a life amongst the clergy. Jerry Whelan, I noticed that during your days in Trinity, you got involved in St. Vincent de Paul, set up the Third World Society, but I was also intrigued by the fact that you were involved in the Rock and Roll Society. What was that about?
Well, my boss in this respect was Brian Fitzgerald. He had this great idea to access some money that was in the Students' Union for a Brill Cream Ball every year. So if we just had to create this or reignite this club. So we did that with just those limited intentions. But it then turned out that people were very eager and they wanted jiving dancing classes. So we organized some kind of classes leading up to the Brill Cream Ball. And it was great fun, a great waste of study time, I should say, in our fourth year of studies. But it was a different part of the brain.
And actually, Charles, you were telling me that one of your first impressions of Trinity was actually almost the very first day you travelled down, because you came down on a Sunday where everything was closed in Northern Ireland, and you came down to Dublin where the shops and the lights were still shining fairly brightly, which was very different from what it was like back home.
Absolutely. But if I can just add to what Jerry has just said, I actually took up ballroom dancing for a term when I left Trinity to go to Oxford for a couple of years. But as my wife keeps reminding me, I have two left feet. But yes, going back to that first evening, I was almost nervous traveling down by bus from Oman, County Tyrone, wondering what to expect, because our towns at that stage were sealed off. And of course, there were the constant bombs and so on. But arriving in Dublin and absolutely being dazzled by the night lights and all that was happening, a totally different world, a world that was very much in colour compared to my black and white.
But while you were studying French and German, Charles, you were obviously trying to perfect your accent for those languages. But also, on occasion, you had trouble making yourself fully understood talking to Dubliners.
I was trying to book tickets to Paris, and the girl behind the counter went off to look up the place to find out where it was, and that really seemed to be strange. And then she got me to write down the name of the place, and which I did, Paris, and she was trying to book flights for a place called Boris or somewhere like that, which she couldn't make up my accent. But talking about accents, we were absolutely hounded and persecuted in the spoken language exercises and what were known as language laboratories in those days, when you had to wear headphones and the professor listened to you. The, the Northerners. We just didn't have those dulcet Southern tones when it came to French and German. And a linguistics lecturer in particular was always hounding the Northerners because he was after the occasional guttural stop, which only we could supply.
Back to you, Jerry. You were capable of being fully understood. And actually, you had a very interesting series of summer holidays, one picking grapes in southern France, but then you also did and went to India to work in Mother Teresa's famous charity.
Yes, I spent 9 weeks in India after my first year in ESS. So it's a funny sort of compliment to pay to Trinity, but the long summer holidays are one of my greatest sources of gratitude. I feel I got a great education when I was not in Trinity in some respects. There was her home for the dying in Calcutta. I spent not all of my 9 weeks there, but it was a wonderful experience, a very enriching experience, the whole visit to India, and had an influence on my later decisions.
Well, I would imagine it would have, because you also did some work in Dublin, in deprived parts of Dublin, just outside the gates of Trinity.
Just outside the walls of Trinity was so different, the culture of the inner city. And it was a learning experience, like going to another country in some ways. Again, a joyful experience in many ways, just animating parents in the area to occupy their children for the summer holidays. Great fun and a great learning curve.
And Charles, from your point of view, we all know we're privileged to go to Trinity. You were practicing your own Presbyterian faith while in college, and also you were involved with the church in Sandymount, which had one or two extra perks going alongside it.
Yes, not Sandymount, actually Adelaide Road.
Oh, Adelaide Road, even better.
Yes, and the perk was that the church somehow had the contract for selling programmes at the Rugby Internationals, which meant that we got in free of charge. And I can remember, I wasn't all that good at rugby at school. I can remember on one occasion being told to go home and play tiddlywinks. In no uncertain terms, I hasten to add. And then one day when I was selling programmes, suddenly to see one of my rugby masters standing in front of me, he was totally surprised to see me there. But yes, when I was in Dublin, I probably was more actively involved in my church at home at that stage. So Dublin was more of an opportunity to take time aside, to take time apart, and to reflect and to ponder this overall sense of call that was very much developing in my life.
Well, let's look at that journey, because you mentioned, Charles, about doing the grad scope to try and get some idea of what you might be best suited for. Jerry Whelan has talked about the social work he was doing at home and abroad. So clearly, within both of you, during those 4 years as an undergraduate at Trinity, you were both seriously thinking about the next stage of your life. And Jerry, if I start with you, because you went from Trinity over to a theology college in Dublin.
If I might just say, back up a little bit, because Charles and I have spoken about this, religious experience. We both had moments of just real religious experience. For me, it was really in my third year, I'd say, in Trinity. Because social work was one thing, but kind of at a deeper level anyway, at some sort of searching for meaning and a moment of change of heart that was very real for me. For Charles, maybe it was in a dramatic way a year or so after Trinity, if I recall correctly. So just to say that, that those sort of things can happen in Trinity as well. Then immediately from Trinity, I went into the Jesuit novitiate, which is still in Dublin. 2 years of sort of intense training. It's prayer time, quiet time, and then more work with the poor. And then you come back and you reflect about it again. So, and after those 2 years, you take vows to be a Jesuit. And then you proceed on a lot more years of training before you get ordained a priest.
Many, many more years of training. And a lot of it was in Africa, which I'll come to in a moment. Charles has already mentioned that after Trinity, you went to do a master's in history at Oxford. And partly at the encouragement of a very influential German professor from Trinity, who played a big part in your life, and she encouraged you to go to Oxford. But was it really at Oxford that you took the final decision that, yes, I want to train to be a minister now?
It was. At Oxford, I studied modern European history from 1815 to 1941. So I often joke that I never find out who won the last war.
It does seem like an odd moment to finish 1815 to 1941.
There you are. But anyhow, Ida Segarra was a German professor. We've maintained contact over all these years. I'm hoping to see her at the beginning of June in Dublin. The German department had an outstanding tutorial system. We were all assigned to a lecturer or professor, and I was so privileged to have her. A very spiritual lady, very pastoral lady. She had great concern for her students and their career paths. So I crossed the water in September 1982. But very soon, I've mentioned the sense of call that was very much with me. Very soon, I felt like a boat being tossed around at sea and having to come to terms with all of this in a much deeper way. And it was really a sense of surrender, a surrender to Jesus Christ. And as a result of that, a complete peace that came that has never left me for the rest of my life.
And is that something, Jerry, that you would share that description? It takes you in a direction.
Absolutely, yeah. I've actually got an image of when that happened for me. I was going through a crisis about what I wanted to do after Trinity. And it was like October in the front square of Trinity. So at least the way my memory works, it's this just beautiful sunshine on the Campanile there. And a transformation, a surrender, just much as Charles describes.
I was going to add something else about the Campanile, because it was there. Jerry has just mentioned an experience he had when I was back in Dublin around November 1990. That's where I proposed to my wife.
Well, there you are.
Different kind
of experience. Big part in all our lives, indeed.
Yes.
Now, Jerry Whelan, back to you ordained a priest in the early 90s. And most of your early work was actually in Africa. You'd worked in Zambia, and then you went to Nairobi, where you were lecturing in a theology college, but also playing the role of a parish priest. And that practical side of Christianity seems to have been such an important part of your early years as a Jesuit.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I would say the study of social science was a great help. You know, a faith that should have some sort of link to society, some connectedness. Now, it's not only social work, but, you know, the social impact of religion was something that I was very committed to. And the ability to try to understand, like, what's going on culturally and social, economically. The background of a Trinity education was a great help. But then, you know, Vatican II in the Catholic Church, and the Jesuits talked a lot about the service of faith and the promotion of justice. So that doing all that kind of work, it was fascinating. One other little aspect is that I was told before I went, and I volunteered to work in Africa, that I would be the last of the missionaries, that they wouldn't need European missionaries during the course of my lifetime. So quite a focus was collaborating with the local church in general and with local African Jesuits. So the teaching of the younger African Jesuits made sense. And then as I expected, as I was told to expect, before my working life was out, I moved on and came to Rome.
We'll go into your experience in Rome, but you just touched on there on passing the baton, if you like, on to the new African generation of their own Jesuits. And I'd like to ask both of you the point about the increased secularization, particularly in the West. We've become a much more secular society, partially perhaps down to controversies around the sex abuse scandals, perhaps over gay rights and everything else. But to both of you, starting with you, Charles, it must be a matter of regret to people of faith to see so many people without any faith.
Well, there have been many paradigm shifts during my own ministry. I suppose as we look at church history in its entirety, there have been times when the tide has ebbed and other times when it has flowed. I suppose I still have an overall assurance of faith. Jesus said that he would build his church. I look at other parts of the world, as Jerry has mentioned, where Christianity is thriving. I recently had the opportunity to visit believers in Jordan, which was a life-changing experience because of their total commitment. I suppose we have created a secular society, but we also now have a pandemic of anxiety. And I wonder if the two are related. And I suppose I would argue that there is a God-shaped vacuum in all of us that only he can actually fill it with. And then again, as I look at my own congregation, I've had the privilege of being in two congregations which have grown over the years. The influence of courses such as the Alpha Course, which are an introduction to Christian faith, which have had an incredible impact. But yes, the ups and downs of all of this, and it's very, very stretching.
So the ordinary members of the faith for me were my parishioners in Nairobi. So I certainly miss them, and they were the making of me, you might say. It's just their faith, I learned so much from them. But even when I was there, they used to laugh at me. I was a kind of incurable intellectual. They would laugh at me, saying, "Look, Father Jerry, we know that really what fascinates you about the conflict in the parish, this particular issue we're talking about, is you'd like to write a theological article about it." So in a sense, I was very happy to move back to academic life. I'm convinced of the way that the right ideas are of the greatest practical value. So this question you mentioned about secularization, you know, every one of the students virtually in our department are studying these sort of questions. Now, they come from the different parts of the world, but they're trying to reflect on the basic relevance of, you know, a Christian vision for society as it is in the different countries of the world.
Charles, you were elected moderator of the Presbyterian Church in 2018, which gave you a national stage. So you've always been very strong on having good cross-church relations.
Yes, I'm not really so much interested in denominational labels at the end of the day. I'm much more interested and focused in relationships. And I suppose if you were to ask me what the fundamental meaning of life actually is, I would answer in terms of building relationships. And that actually was my theme during my year as moderator, building relationships. Interesting, the news item, during my year, I was involved as one of the main four church leaders here in Ireland. And here in Northern Ireland, we were involved in trying to get the politicians together, trying to get them to meet in the one room, because at that time, the Stormont Assembly was down. So those relationships that developed among us as church leaders were very fruitful and very worthwhile and very rewarding. But throughout my life and ministry, I've been so enriched by Christians from other traditions.
And Jerry, you've already mentioned how much you enjoyed your work in Nairobi, working with your parishioners, but you also did a lot of work closely with Anglican ministers as well in Kenya.
Yes, that's right. A reality in Africa was often which missionaries arrived first in a place, and then the majority. So it's as arbitrary as that. So people's cousins from the next village would be a different denomination. So they see the nonsense of this divisiveness that often came from the ministers. So our area was originally an Anglican area. So there were two parishes for the one Catholic parish in my area, quite a densely populated slum area in Nairobi. But I had great relations there. Really, we had this principle of small Christian communities, so little neighborhood Bible reading groups, which is a kind of a Catholic policy now. You read the Bible once a week, even outside of Sunday Mass, and in a group of maybe 20 families, and then think about how to apply that in your area. And it might mean something like clean up the rubbish on the streets or also take care of poor people. But anyway, the Anglicans were saying, wow, you're more Protestant than we are. So they actually started a parallel group of these neighborhood groups. That was great cooperation. Then actually at a national level, I got involved as well. I was asked to be part of a process for the bishops of Kenya to train one ecumenical coordinator for each diocese.
Charles, go ahead.
Gary, I was just going to add that when I was in Oxford, I stayed in a Russian Orthodox center for a year.
Wow.
Then, as you correctly mentioned, I had the pleasure of representing our denomination when Pope Francis came to Ireland. And then after I was elected moderator, the icing on the cake for me, given that my father and paternal grandfather come from a very strong Anglican tradition, was that I was elected as an ecumenical canon to serve in St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin.
Oh, great.
I was there on Sunday morning past, and the idea of preaching in a place, speaking in a place which has 1,000 years of history, I find that so overwhelming and so humbling.
Jerry, one aspect of your work in Rome is a detailed study of Pope Francis and his papacy. What are the standout points from your perspective in terms of what his leadership is bringing to the church?
What would I say? Creativity and not remaining stuck in the past. Now, Pope Francis is all about that in all of the cultures. He's talking about processes of rethinking. How do we engage with culture? And that's really what I find most helpful about him.
No, absolutely. And can I also finish off this conversation by thanking the both of you for the openness with which you've responded to my initial email to say, would you like to have come together on this particular podcast? And as you said, you've had phone calls and you've had email exchanges. So it really is something that I appreciate. And hopefully that friendship and connection will continue in the months and years ahead.
And we believe it will. We're already talking about maybe me traveling up and visiting Charles in this summer.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
But look, Dr. Charles McMullen in Bangor and Professor Jerry Whelan in Rome, thank you very much for joining us in this latest episode of Trinity Reconnected. Thanks for listening.